WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Happy summer to everybody out there. Set your dial at AM 1570 for us while we still have those AM radios and Dennis's cars over Coons, Baltimore, Ford. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road next week. Taking a little rest, but we're going to be eating plenty of crab cakes. I had a crab cake at Fately's on Saturday. I was at Costas last week, getting around town. We're going to be at Pappas and Glen Burnie, setting that up with Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman. Lots of things happening. June, July, August. But nothing more important than the fact that the Orioles are torrid. The Ravens are showing up this week. The weather's gotten a little sticky outside. And Luke Jones, he recognizes this from 15 years of running around watching really lousy baseball this time of year and really hopeful football this time of the year. Let's start with the really good baseball that has come upon us and always helps when a really bad team comes to town. But that's when you're supposed to take care of business, Luke. That's when Gunnar Henderson's supposed to step out and say, I am an M, not a might be, right?
No question about it. And really, for me, Nestor, it wasn't the beginning being, Friday night wasn't the beginning of this. It really started Thursday afternoon in Milwaukee. 3-0 early in that game. How many times, whether you're talking about good teams or bad teams, how many times do you see a team at that point, last day of a road trip, getaway day, you're thinking about the flight home to Baltimore, you'll get home, maybe have a nice dinner, whatever. But the Orioles came back, won that last game against the Brewers. The bats came alive in the final three innings, which, go back the last 2-3 weeks, the bats had really been scuffling overall. And then they come home after a 6-3 win over the Brewers, and they do exactly what you're supposed to do. They beat up on a bad team over the weekend, and it's one of those times where we've talked about this over and over. Every time it looks like the Orioles are getting ready to go into not even like a major tailspin, but just a slump, right? They lose a couple games, they lose a series. They'd gone through a stretch where they lost a few series here recently. They come right back, and they were able to do that against Milwaukee, and they avoid being swept for the first time all year. And then they come home and they do exactly what good teams should do against a team like the Kansas City Royals. They handled them. And to be able to win and sweep a series and the last two games of that series, avoid using Felix Bautista, avoid using Yennier Cano. Adley Rutschman didn't have to play on Sunday, and that's only happened a couple times all year. So life is good. And when you finish the weekend at 17 games above 500 as you're approaching mid-June, first time the Orioles have been 17 over since July of 2016, the last time they made the playoffs, mind you.
Hey, I love that you have my new magic number. That's a new magic number. The new magic number is how many games over 500 are you? Because that's really going to dictate whether you're in the playoffs or not. It's not a game of elimination. It's a game of, did we win enough games? Are we going to get into 90 to be able to be a playoff team? And that's the new baseball.
And it's feeling that way because you continue to look at how tough the AL East is and just how competitive the division is top to bottom. Although,
and that you don't have to see them 18 times next month because you just are stuck playing. We're going to see them this week. But it's nice playing the Royals. It's nice playing the Pirates and the Brewers, even when the Brewers beat you a little bit. But it's nice to get out and it's been a really good year for baseball to get good here again, because I mean, even my wife and I are buying and we're watching every night, right?
No question about it. And I mean, it's not even so much playing the bad teams in the AL. You get to play some of the bad teams in the NL now, because you're going to play every team at least once as far as a series goes. So, but life's good. And you look at over the weekend and Sunday, especially, and we'll talk about Gunnar Henderson. There's plenty to talk about with Gunnar Henderson. And I mean, one of the more mammoth home runs we've seen at Camden Yards that he hit on Sunday, but just take a look at Sunday's lineup on paper going into that game. I mean, we know they're missing Cedric Mullins, and Aaron Hicks has done a really good job in his place. But you look at the middle of that lineup, you have Ryan O'Hearn as your cleanup hitter, Aaron Hicks hitting fifth, Ramon Urias hitting sixth, Josh Lester hitting in that lineup, James McCann at the bottom of the lineup. As I mentioned, no Adley Rutschman on Sunday.
It looked like one of those 52-win Oriole team lineups a little bit.
I mean, it just looked like
A Trey Mancini or a Chris Davis. Yes, I would agree.
Yeah,
it was not. It's not their best look. It's a Sunday afternoon. It is what it is. 100 degrees out.
Exactly, and you're not going to play everyone 162. And I continue to see people say it on social media that Adley needs to DH when he's not catching. By the way, he usually does, but you have to give him a full day off every now and then.
Well, I mean, two you just days have off to. In this case, when you get a chance to like give him an all-star break.
Right. And that's something that Buck Showalter used to do a lot of times with Matt Wieters. As much as we talk about the Orioles and how they ran Wieters into the ground, there would be times where Buck would say, all right, we have an off day on Monday. You're not going to play on
That happened
Sunday. We'll
four
get.
times a year, so he'd play
Yeah.
157 games, is what he
Right.
did, right?
Exactly. That's why, after 10 years, he was done. But no, I think you just looked at that
I wonder
lineup
if
with.
Matt Wieters talks about how much he got run like a mule the way we do.
Probably. I'll tell you who does. Maybe not Matt Wieters because he's a high character guy and everything. Scott Boras certainly mentioned it. I'll say that much. But no, you
Saying
look.
Scott Boras is not a high character individual? Did you just insinuate that?
I'm saying he's a very strong advocate for his client, Nestor. I'll
He's
leave it
always
at
been
that.
kind to me.
Yeah. But you just look at that lineup and you say, all right, it's going to be a tough go of it. I mean, not that you're playing. I mean, you're playing the Royals. We understand that, but. I mean, look at the contributions they got. O'Hearn, three hits, four runs scored. He hit a long home run late in Sunday's game. Aaron Hicks with a couple hits. I mentioned Urias. As much as he had struggled coming off of the IL, his bat has really come alive here over the last 5, 6 days. And Josh Lester, he had another two-run single. So, look, these aren't guys that you're necessarily expecting to carry you long-term by any stretch. In fact, in the case of someone like Josh Lester, I'm guessing he's probably not going to be on the roster that much longer.
Yeah, you said that about
But
Aaron Hicks a couple of weeks ago, right?
well, but the point with that is over the course of 162, and Brandon Hyde talked about this after Sunday's win, you're going to need contributions from some guys that you're not anticipating it. I mean,
Like Aaron Hicks.
one of my all-time favorite Orioles that I'm going to mention here, and people will grow fond of hearing this name because they'll think back to 2014, Steve Pierce. Had been DFA'd earlier in that season. He was actually kind of sort of out of their plans, and then they brought him back. They had some health situations, things of that nature. And Steve Pierce is one of their absolute best
He
players
was
in
their best player for a
2014.
month that year,
Yeah,
right?
he was arguably their best player in the second half of that season. I mean, Nelson Cruz was great, of course. Adam Jones had a great year that year,
But they don't
I
make
mean,
the run they make if he's not getting two, three hits a night, because he really was,
he
he
was
was the star.
fantastic.
He won games for them. Yes. I mean, and he's a name that nobody's got a Steve Pierce jersey. He played for 10 other teams, like the whole deal, right?
Exactly. So the point is not that any of these guys I just mentioned are going to do that for 3 or 4 months, but you need some contributions from some unexpected contributors over the course of the season because you're going to have some injuries. You're going to have some guys slump. You're going to have some of those things happen where you need that deep depth. That you tap into the 40-man roster, or in some cases you promote someone to the 40-man roster, and they're going to contribute for a little while. So we'll continue to focus on guys at the AAA level and wait on Jordan Westberg and Colton Cowser and maybe Heston Kerstad before it's all said and done. But Grayson Rodriguez, DL Hall, I mean, the usual suspects. But in the meantime, to get some of the contributions that they've received from some under the radar guys, or in the case of Aaron Hicks, completely cast off by the Yankees after really struggling the last 2 or 3 years, it's been fun to see. And in the case of
Almost
the
a Chris
Orioles,
Davis kind of thing with him, right? Like sort of a little bit of like, they're paying him so much. They did everything they could do. This would be Chris Davis getting at bats with the Reds and hitting 265 and being like a player. I mean, like there's a little bit of nobody else wanted him and the Yankees were paying him. And let's be honest, this was all when Mullins came up lame out of the batter's box. That's what put all this in motion, right?
well, not just that, but Colton Cowser being on the IL at the same time as well. So even your top option down at Norfolk was unavailable at the time. So, it was a perfect storm for Aaron Hicks in that regard. And look, we'll see what he's hitting in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. But in the meantime, he's been a positive contributor for them. And you can't say enough about some of these under the radar, off the radar kind of guys that. We kind of joke about in spring training when you're hearing about the backup first base competition with guys like O'Hearn, but they've done a nice job. And in the case of O'Hearn specifically, he's really played pretty regularly for a couple of weeks now. I mean, he's raked. I mean, he absolutely has. So really fun weekend for the Orioles, and we'll see how they fare against the Blue Jays coming into town. And we know Toronto. Regardless of how they played at different times this year, very, very talented, top to bottom with that roster. But life is good for the Orioles when you're talking about a team that's 17 games over 500 and we're still a few weeks away from 4th of July. That's saying something about where Brandon Hyde's club is right now.
Talk about Hyde a little bit because when Elias came out and spoke to that group that I saw a couple months ago, and I The game has changed so much. Like, I haven't talked to a Major League Baseball manager in 17 years, like really sat and talked to one of them, and how much the job has changed from, oh, I've got the feels for Baker in the seventh inning, or, you know, I feel like we need Cano in this matchup or whatever. There's so much plug and play that goes on in regard to who's going to play and who's not going to play. What do you know about how the Orioles are running that way? You've been around. You've been on the inside of this. I have not been.
Right. First of all, they do try to keep things as proprietary as they can, understandably so. But I don't think it's even so much plug and play as much as it's just so rehearsed. It's so scrimmaged. Every scenario that they're going to go through, it really is a collaborative effort. And let's be clear, it doesn't mean Brandon Hyde doesn't have any say here. It just means that the rest of the front office has a lot of input in lineup construction, in terms of matchups, in terms of pitchers, when you're talking about your bullpen use, and this is where, you know, the training staff factors in here. All
manager ego has moved from the top floor to the bottom floor. Billy Martin and Earl Weaver, Dick Williams, they wouldn't recognize this. They come back and say, "You're telling me who's going to hit in the seventh?" Like it wouldn't make sense to old baseball people.
Sure, I mean, I think Buck Showalter is a fascinating, you know, middle
a
ground.
Tweener.
I don't even know if I'd say middle ground. Buck is still very old school. I think he recognized analytics being a reality. You know, I mean, it's not as though the Orioles had a beefed up analytics department when he was here, but they had some, certainly more than there had been in the past.
They gave that money to Chris Davis.
And now with him being with the Mets, their lack of success and being a disaster notwithstanding, it's certainly a major part of what they do. So yeah,
got off to a good start in New York.
It was great last year until they lost the division and then got eliminated early in the playoffs. But no, I think you look at that. Yeah, I mean, it used to be you thought about the manager, kind of being in lockstep with the general manager or whoever was adding the players, whoever was signing the players, whoever was essentially representing ownership in that regard, right? But it really is a case of the field manager, the dugout manager has become more of middle management. That doesn't mean they don't serve a purpose. It doesn't mean it's not an important role, but it is different from the standpoint of how much data you have, how much information. You know, a lineup is constructed that's generally, and I'm not even saying this about the Orioles. This is kind of just general knowledge that's been around baseball, knowing that every team has an analytics department now, where you'll have a lineup that's kind of spit out, so to speak, for lack of a more sophisticated description. And then you adjust based on, all right, who's healthy? You know, who's got a banged up ankle? You know, who's got a sore hamstring that you maybe they're not so injured that they can't play, but you want them to DH and not be out in the field.
Well, there's also situationally too. You know, who's
exactly
pitching, right?
Exactly.
And who might be pitching in the fifth inning?
Right. I mean, all.
I mean,
the
Royals had a starter on Sunday that you knew wasn't going to go to the fourth inning.
Right. Right. Exactly. I mean, you got openers, all kinds of different stuff that's at work there. So it really is a collaborative effort in that regard. You know, the way some teams work with it is the manager will have ultimate final say on the lineup, but I think that's more ceremony than anything. I think it's much more a case of we're all on the same page here. We're all fighting the same fight here at the end of the day. Let's be in lockstep. Let's be consistent here. And you know, we'll go from there. And in that regard, because you see so much of it, and you and I've talked about it a lot, because my goodness, the Orioles have leaned so heavily on their best bullpen arms. It's always talked about those games where Hyde goes to someone like an Austin Voth or goes to CNL Perez or Mike Bauman, although Bauman certainly has had his share of success in some higher leverage situations of late as well. But you can't pitch Bautista every single night. You can't pitch Yennier Cano every single night.
It's not Strat-O-Matic, right?
You can't do Brian. You can't have Brian Baker pitch every single night. We even saw him go through a little period where his velocity was down a little bit to the point where you thought, okay, maybe a little bit of a dead arm period. So you're doing all that. But even with that, you're going through every scenario, every hitter. You know, if this guy comes off the bench to pinch hit for so-and-so, who's probably going to be the optimal matchup there? And look, you can't make it work perfectly every single time, but you also look at the opponent's lineup tendencies and say, all right, this might be a sweet spot in the order. This might be a certain part in the game where this reliever might be best, because that team generally will hit three lefties in four spots, in this kind of a pitching matchup. So,
well, it wasn't a close game on Sunday, but there's your point for Rutschman being a guy you pull off the bench or seventh, eighth inning, that if the other team has that sort of player as well, you're looking for matchups to not get burned late in close games. And all they do is play close games at this point. But I guess my point would be the internet gets upset at Hyde. And this is, look, I've been taking phone calls for 31 years here. I mean, my last name's Aparicio. I've been up and down the river on pitching matchups and gut feels and seventh inning lefty righty matchups and like just all of that. But in the modern era, to your point, much of that's scripted way ahead of time before the series even begins, if this, then that. But Hyde, I don't know what's his decision and what's not. I guess the hardest part of any of this is assigning not fault, blame, credit, just whose assignment is it? Whose role is it? Or is it when we see an eighth inning pitching change, I never think, oh, that's just the manager being whatever. In the modern era, I think, oh, well, this is the way that the Broadway script came down, before the series began, because they're playing Toronto in a couple, they have all of these other things in their minds that Joe Sixpack and tweeting out in left field in the eighth inning doesn't have.
Right. And look, even in the media, there's certain elements. For example, I'll give you a perfect example. I mean, on Sunday, we found out Danny Coulomb, who's been so good as a lefty out of the bullpen, he was under the weather over the weekend. Now, the Orioles aren't going to broadcast that he's completely unavailable. And maybe if they had played a closer game on Saturday or Sunday, maybe he still could have pitched. But you have things like that happen over the course of a season. So there is a lot of unknown there. And look, the cynical perspective on what we're talking about here is when you do that collaborative effort, it makes everyone have less accountability, right? I mean, you could talk about who gets the blame. Well, hey, it's not my fault. It's front office. Front office can say, hey, the manager didn't carry it out the way we wanted it to. So you can have some of that at work. And look,
you have that in baseball when a guy misses the bunt sign or misses the steal sign, right?
Yeah.
Like who missed the sign? Well, I don't know. Who's banging on the trash cans in Houston? Luke Jones is here. He's Baltimore Luke. He's covering all things Orioles. Given a day off earlier in the week. Not a lot of days off, right? So, like, this part of the season, there is a little bit of 90 degrees, getting hot, flying back and forth. At the end of the year, the Orioles have this wild West Coast thing in August and September that as much padding as they can get and taking three from the Royals, that's just – that's gravy. That's a beautiful thing if you think you're a pennant race team, and they are.
No question. And we've talked about this. I mean, and it's not even so much you expect to sweep these series, but when you do, you're just giving yourself less work for later in the season, right? I mean, we've talked about how competitive the AL East is, how much of a bear the division is, and that will continue to be the case. I mean, so you can't avoid that, but what you can do is win as many games as you can against the lesser opponents. So, at a minimum, you go into this weekend saying you want to take two out of three, but when then you get three, that's one more potential series loss to a really good team.
Yeah, it makes up for that Milwaukee debacle on Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but even the example on Thursday, I mean, that looked like it was going to be a sweep, and suddenly you say, okay, it's two out of three. The road trip isn't 2-4 anymore. It's 3-3. You're just making things that much easier for yourself down the stretch. And that's how you turn a good season into a really good season. And in that regard, that's where I'll use a comparison to the 2012 Orioles, where, that was a season that, I mean, they were so bad in 2011. So that's where it's not exactly the same, because this team played really well the second half last year. So it's not as though this is completely out of left field, although I certainly wouldn't have expected 41-24 through 65 games. But the point is, when you take a series that you say, all right, let's get two out of three, but then you sweep, or you have a series that you're afraid of getting swept and you manage to get the final game to salvage one out of three, that's what transforms an 85 win season, where you're saying, all right, are you going to be on the outside looking in for that last wild card spot, to suddenly being 90 wins, 91, 92, 93 wins. I mean, that 2012 team, remember, they won so many extra inning games. They won so many one run games. We talk so much about that team's run differential over the course of the season. And now for most of the season, it was a negative run differential, despite the fact that they had played so well. That's why people weren't really believing it in terms of sustainability. And the Orioles, to a lesser degree this year, but look, they don't have a dominant run differential. They're not blowing teams out the way that Tampa Bay does or the way that Texas does. So in that regard, when you look at them from an eyeball test standpoint, you say, all right, are they really the third best team in the majors? You know, even though their record says they are, and you are what your record says you are at the end of the day, from a true talent level standpoint, probably not. I don't feel like I'm being a hater saying that, but I will say this. They've won enough games and they've done enough damage and they've beaten enough bad teams and they've held their own against enough good teams to say, I think they're at least, and I say this as a compliment. I'm not saying this to be damning with praise or anything like that. I think they're at least very solid. They're very comfortably one of the 6, 7, 8 best teams in baseball easily with how they've played, even looking at run differential and sabermetrics and some of the, you know, stats talking about good fortune and luck and things like that. I mean, they played really good baseball this year, and this team deserves all the credit that they've gotten. And
well, you make your own luck when you don't kick the ball around, when you don't give the other team 4 outs, when, you know, they've run themselves out of some innings. I mean, I've seen them run the bases a little crazily at various points. But other than that, I mean, the pitching isn't great, right? I mean, we know that they're getting by with bubble gum and paper clips until such point. I mean, John Means is too busy hitting a bird seed in the dugout. At least he's around, maybe. Grayson Rodriguez maybe finding form, and the question between AAA and the big leagues is as big as the ocean when he comes back as to what that will be. But and then Elias is talking ish about a deal and talking about, we're going to bring in a real pitcher and bring in a grown-up and bring in a, you know, horse, because they're 17 games over 500, and you don't think their pitching is good enough for October right now. Neither do I, by the way. I don't think in a tournament they're the second-best team if they have to go with as constructed and put Cedric Mullins back out on the field. That's great. Sure. He's fine. But the pitching is what you don't like, that you don't love.
Right. And let's be clear. Is the pitching good enough to get them to October? Well, they're 17 over as it is right now. I mean, you look at their playoff odds and things of that nature. It's not a slam dunk. Let's be clear. There's a long, long season to go.
I would bet on them making the playoffs right now.
Yeah, sure. I'm not going to sit here and say no on that. Why would I say that? I've watched this team on a nightly basis.
I mean, it wouldn't even matter what odds you would give me to bet against them. I just don't think they're not making the playoffs. So, you know what I mean? Like, I only think they are, not aren't, at this point.
I mean, it comes down to this. You can say that about, look, are there things that could go wrong that would cause them to miss the playoffs? Yeah, you could say that about just about every team in the league right now, other than maybe Tampa Bay, because, you know, they've done so much at this point.
When I say those things about the Ravens, people want to shoot me about Lamar Jackson because he's definitely winning the Super Bowl. It's June, you know?
Well, so, yeah, but everyone's optimistic this time of year in that regard. But no, you look at the rotation right now, and let's be clear. Has the rotation provided a higher floor since the month of April when, let's face it, the rotation was looking pretty ugly, you know, and you looked at where they were from an ERA standpoint, all of that? Yeah. I mean, Kyle Gibson after he ran into some trouble. Salvi Perez hits a two-run homer in the third inning, and you're kind of saying, oh, wow, they're really starting to square up and hit some balls hard against him. He ends up pitching into the seventh inning. You know, he's got a 3.9 ERA. He's been actually slightly better than league average. I mean, that's about as much as you can expect from Kyle Gibson in his career. Tyler Wells has pitched well. You know, there are times you'd like to see him get a little deeper into games, but we've, by and large, I mean, he's got a 3.24 ERA. He's got a whip of 0.85. I mean, he's been really good. You know, Dean Kramer, we know he struggled a lot in April. Since then, he's been more good than bad. You know, Kyle Bradish, generally speaking, more good than bad. And, you know, Cole Irvin,
he hung in the other day. I mean, it looked like he was going to get bounced out 5 runs. You know, talk about kicking the ball around a little bit or making the inning a little longer than it needed to be. I mean, that first inning was rough.
Sure, sure. But that's the difference right there that you're seeing from this rotation that you weren't seeing necessarily in April, is that one bad inning isn't sending a guy to the showers, right? That one
he's
bad
still
inning,
out there in the fourth inning, fifth inning, right?
He's at least – right, exactly. And you mentioned Bradish. I mean, that was a big part of them being able to come back against Milwaukee in the finale. I mean, they fell behind early, and then he put up a bunch of zeros and started striking people out and actually had a decent outing, you know, all things considered. But, you know, Gibson, like I said, in the third inning on Sunday, you're kind of, I think Kansas City hit 4 straight balls, 105 miles per hour or harder. I mean, it's a lot of loud contact the second time through the order. And you're seeing that and you're saying, ooh, okay, the pitch count's fine, but effectiveness wise, is he going to make it through four or five, or is he going to get knocked out of the game? And then you look up and it's a seventh inning and you're winning and Kyle Gibson has gotten you into, you know, six and a third innings. So that's about as much as you can expect from this current rotation. Now, over the course of a long season, that coupled with the bullpen that the Orioles have, that'll get you in October.
I would agree with all your assessments. All the pitchers have hit a ceiling here at some point. You can't expect them to be better over the next 60 games, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say this much. I don't want to say it's a complete ceiling for, you know, a Wells. I think Kyle Bradish, he shows the stuff, and we saw this the last 2 months of last season where he had some. I mean, remember the game he pitched in Houston? I mean, that was dominant against a team that won the World Series. So I don't want to say that they've hit their ceiling, but realistically speaking, I don't know if you can expect too much more out of these guys. That's why I've talked so much about Grayson Rodriguez and trying to get him right, because the stuff that he has, you just look at that, the ability that he has, the talent that he has, it's a higher ceiling than the other guys in this current rotation. So now that said, that's where you get into Mike Elias. That's where you get into, okay, what pitchers around the league are playing on teams that will potentially be sellers over the next 7 weeks as we get to the August 1st trade deadline. And what is that cost going to be? You don't want to completely sell off your entire farm system. Let's be clear about that. I don't think there's any move that could be made where I'm trading Jackson Holliday at this point. Let's be very clear about that. However, are there other guys in this system that are either blocked or you might think privately probably not going to be quite as great as maybe the outside Baseball America types think is going to be out of a prospect? And you move that guy or you move a couple guys to another team to go acquire that. And it's not always an ace even, but a serious top half of the rotation guy to add to the mix of what you already have. You do that, then it changes your complexion in October. And look, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about trade deadline. And that's what makes this fun, right? We're not going to be talking about the Orioles being sellers. We're going to be talking about opportunities for them to hopefully buy. And you hope they do, because my goodness, these players, this coaching staff, certainly the fans, they deserve that. So absolutely a message to Elias in the front office, and probably an even louder message to ownership to say, hey, it's a really good ball club. And
we're not playing for next year.
You are, but this is what they're doing right now is part of the whole thing, right?
They're not going to skimp into the final wild card and, you know, back into a play-in game. That I don't think that's who this team's going to be. I think this is a solid, they're going to make the playoffs, and then they're going to have to fend. And they're going to have to fend in quick games. You talk about playing all these close games. This will serve them well when they get in one in October.
Exactly. You certainly hope so. And again, we'll see what they can do to fortify the roster. Keep in mind, there are guys at the AAA level right now. DL Hall could be another shutdown reliever for them out of the bullpen in August and September, even if he's not in the rotation, let's say. So, boy, there's a lot to be excited about. Not going to throw a parade over a sweep over the lowly Royals, but the Orioles continue to do exactly what you asked them to do, and that's win series and bounce back every time they go through even a little bit of a lull. They come roaring back, and you're feeling that much better about that club a few days later. And that's really the mark of not just a good team, but a team that has a chance to be really, really good at the end of the season.
All right, we're going to give Gunnar Henderson his flowers, talk some Rutschman, talk about Mullins coming back, talk about where Rodriguez is. We'll do all of that. Luke is in Owings Mills a lot of the week, but also at Oriole Park. He will be sweating it out all week, as will I. You can find us at Baltimore Positive and WNST AM 1570, where we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.